To know Krishna fully is not only to do those things we just mentioned, but he says it's also to not study his precepts, as in the Gita, but to actually embody them. And he says, if this is too high, if this practice is too high for you, which it is for most people, especially in this day and age, he says you can do a kind of a mystic meditation where you take any sacred object, any object that's sacred to you. It can be a being, like Krishna or Buddha or Jesus. It could be a idea, like a perfected being. What's a perfected being, or what's a sage? And you find an incredible description of a sage in the Bhagavad Gita, for example. And if you just take an idea like that, you could even have a little image that you associate the idea with if you want to. And you just, you go to that and you just think about the qualities of that being. The qualities of that being. The love, the compassion, the knowledge, the wisdom. You're not thinking about yourself. You're thinking about the qualities of that being. And you just keep doing that. Day after day, day after day. Pretty soon, in the course of time, says Krishna, the qualities of that being on whom you've been adoring, the qualities of that being will be assimilated into your own being. And you'll begin the process of self-transformation. This is like a kind of magic. It's more like alchemy. That was a dance of Krishna. We're on the flute tonight. Maybe to the dance next time. I lost my train of thought on that one.
Self-transformation.
Yeah, the self-transformation is... It's a magical process. And it's pointed out that by Shankaracharya, who's the one who first separated the Bhagavad Gita as a separate text out of the longer thing, Mahabharata, and wrote a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita that's said to be to unlock more of the mysteries of the Bhagavad Gita. So where is this going? Yeah, Shankara says that the mind, back to the mind, it's through the mind, to put it kind of crudely, that we either save ourselves or damn ourselves. Save ourselves or damn ourselves. So the mind is the pivotal factor. And in that regard, it's mentioned by a woman named Blavatsky, who some of you have heard about before. She says that, the article on which this talk is based says that in order to reach self-illumination, i.e. awareness of Krishna, one of the mandatory things that has to happen is one has to start thinking constructively about oneself. If one cannot think constructively about oneself, one can never get there. To think constructively about oneself is not to go read a bunch of self-help books that tell you how to think about yourself, while ignoring all the parts of yourself that you'd rather not think about. to think instructively about oneself is to do so in the context of self-study, of facing one's defects, facing one's obscurations, taking a look at how one feels in relation at the present time to the moment of death, which is inevitable. Taking all that into account, it's still necessary to think of oneself constructively. So this is this is clearly a process that requires training, and it requires persistence. Because it's very difficult for people to think of themselves constructively if their self-image is based primarily upon negative things. So it's like a reversal of the polarity. It's not a Pollyanna thing. Oh, I'm so cool, I think of myself as just happy and wonderful. No, that's not it. Thinking of oneself constructively means I'm a being who's inherently, I may not feel it, but Krishna tells me that's true, who's inherently pure, inherently enlightened, inherently compassionate, and all these things reside inside me as a reflection of Krishna. And those kinds of thoughts about oneself, if persisted in, while at the same time giving due attention to self-study and what's called cheerful self-correction, if this is persisted in, this thinking constructively of oneself, while ignoring nothing, this will actually produce within oneself what's called the seed, S-E-E-D, of bodhicitta. We're going on beyond the Gita now. The seed of bodhicitta is a seed in one's heart of enlightenment, which if watered and nurtured over lifetimes perhaps, grows into a bodhisattva, which is a being who's one with Krishna. So how one thinks of oneself is critical. It's as though one has to believe what Krishna says about you. Believe what he says about himself, believe what he says about you. And everything that's out of line with that, let it go. Just let it go. It's not real. It's a shadow. It's an illusion. Yeah, but what about my work? Nothing. Go to work. Do your very best. The less uptight and anxious you are about it, the better job you'll do. And the less attached you are to it, you'll even do a better job. So the bottom line is doing the best one can while having no concern for the outcome. As long as there's a concern for the outcome, says Krishna, there'll be attachment. And even if you get the outcome you want, it will be transitory. And in the end, will disappoint. So you do what you need to do, which you need to discover, and you do it the best you can, if you can, with Krishna in mind, and just keep doing that. And to put it in slightly more philosophical terms, human beings have, we talked about the eye of Shiva not too long ago, and all these things are really different ways of talking about the same thing. Because there's only one reality. Even physics teaches that much. And the laws of physics are the same everywhere, and blah, blah, blah. And the way light works, it works the same everywhere. It's not political. It's not, it doesn't give a damn how old or young you are, or pretty or ugly. You know, so the universe is kind of the same everywhere. And so reality, capital R, or truth, capital T, or love, capital L, they're the same everywhere.